I can feel myself at 18 raging, and the rage energy propelled me to defiantly pull my innards out and swirl them around my head lovingly. But that was a reaction, and that was good, and that was helpful. But as I've matured, I've been able to cultivate a sense through performance as a form of meditation as well, of responsiveness.
Welcome to How to Play in Slow Time, interviews on creativity, where artists pull back the curtain on their creative practices and share how they listen, play, embody, imagine, model, and collaborate towards discovering something new. In this episode, performance artist Emma Mae Gibson, also known as Betty Grumble, speaks about the centrality of movement to her creative practice. She shows how communing with the natural world is at the heart of her artistic processes, inseparable from her life.
My name is Emma Mae Gibson. I am she, her, and I am an artist, a performance artist, and a person very interested in meeting with other bodies to create meaning and to be together in a variety of cathartic, pleasurable, and hopefully medicinal ways. I have very strong memories of using my body to conduct dance rituals and kind of whirling, swirling celebration of myself, often for myself, and the nature I'd find myself in as I spent a lot of time imagining worlds, which was born out of, you know, wonderful people around me, family members that were very powerful and creative themselves, a little brother that also joined me in those moments of world making, but also feeling alien and alone and frightened in some ways of some of the experiences that I had. And imagination and play was a great refuge. I would definitely be in commune with the fairies. Water, I remember spending a lot of time underwater blowing out bubbles and wishing and making kind of alchemical spells and craft work, which really is, if you think about performance making, strategizing ways to use elements to affect your body or to create new space or create reactions in the world around you. So I'm kind of at a maturation point of my practice where I'm looking back at that child self and her intuition and trying to cultivate that deeper in myself. So through this avatar of Betty Grumble, I've made several works with her, kind of meeting the world. Sex Clown Saves the World, Love and Anger, The Unshame Machine, Enemies of Grooviness Eat Shit, 24-Hour Grumble Boogie. And in that experience with working with an avatar, she's also melted off to reveal me and the space between character or queening, the queendom of her has melted and allowed me to step through in the healing process. And I realized that I created Betty Grumble like a friend and a sister when I needed to be held, and shared that with an audience, and she really was my witness and continues to be. And now she belongs to the universe, she's recognizable in a way, but I still am her. I conduct with her, but her name means something now. There's an understanding to her ethos, which is exciting. My brain, it never stops being with the feelings that I'm having about what I want to put into the world. And that is, in terms of being healthy as a maker, an interesting thing about how to rest and put things down. So I've tried to cultivate a practice of just a humming as I believe my subconscious is at work in tending to and unraveling and questioning whatever it is that I'm trying to process, which has been so autobiographical because it's also been a survival mechanism. It's been so wrapped up in trying to get free of this narrative that I've inherited through dominant culture, patriarchal violence, and the affect it's had on my body. A static dance practice, so I was doing it this morning, like to play music and to just move my body intuitively. And often images or poetry will just wash over me. I spend a lot of time sitting with nature and trying to listen deeply and work on being attuned to other ways of seeing outside of just with my eyes. So seeing with my heart space, in my flesh and spirit, and then being in commune with water as well has been really important. But in terms of, you know, having a deadline, like I'm kind of in at the moment and trying to write something, quite practically I just try and enter a focus space of almost automatic writing, reading things out loud, listening to myself back, singing them, dancing them, strategizing in different ways. I don't know whether it's post-pandemic or post a few years of a few difficult challenges, but my attention span is not as sophisticated as it once was. So I'm trying to be really kind with myself and shift how my body is with process in different ways. I was even like yesterday trying to write for a bit and I got up, just did 10 star jumps. Got a lot of fire, so there's a lot of combustion. And I know that stillness is coming for me, a meditation, a need for that. But right now, it's still very much a practice of movement, rolling around the ground, moving my body, talking to the trees, trying to find humour, saying it laughing. Creating the environment for which the creativity to come through. So you need a certain amount of patience and spaciousness. But then when you've got time pressure and things need to come through, I am finding myself laying on the ground, breathing out. What other ways can your creativity come through that kind of are already in the world and leaving space for things? Like, I used to be really busy in my practice and that was beautiful and dynamic, but now what is it just to play the interview? What is it just to have something that represents something on stage? The images of my mother, elephants trumpeting, like, I'm trying to sit in more spaciousness and stillness, so becoming more layered and dense can have space to breathe. So I'm just trying to be very present in my body. Grumble Boogie is usually traditionally goes for 1 hour and it manifests like a dance class. And this dance style is aerobic 1970s, 1980s cheese with my special brand of mystical affirmations and laughter. And it's very daggy and I'm just a bit silly with my choreography, but it always strikes a nice balance of being just challenging enough to hypnotize you into exercising. And because lots of different people come and boogie, and I'm really proud of just who I look out into when I'm conducting those. So Grumble Boogie has been a limb of my practice. It was just a great way for me to be active, share my body, share health with people, and also be financially supported in terms of being able to put on something that was easily accessible and I could do it quite spontaneously. So it's maintained as something I've done through my practice. And then the pandemic hit and I just chose to one day, I was like, I'm going to do a Grumble Boogie online, everybody. 20 minutes on Instagram Live, join me. And then it was very successful. It felt good for my body. People tuned in. And then it just went on every day, 20 minutes. And that was very heart affirming for me. It gave me meaning. It gave me purpose in a time that was very frightening. Also put in work to make it happen. They kept getting shut down and it took me a little moment to figure out that Instagram won't let you play copyrighted songs over a certain amount of time. And so they were often like manifesting with me just popping in and out of the live stream. It was frustrating. So every night I would sit and edit together and slow down or speed up these songs so they would trick the robots and they wouldn't censor me. I have all of these weird mixes of like, let's dance. It's very strange. But that was also something I was doing with my body to give me purpose in the evenings and probably my partner at the time was supportive, but also that must have been for them. I'm like, come on, get up. We're going to do the Grumble Boogie. But I get people coming up to me every week still going, thank you for your Grumble Boogies. They really helped me. You've saved me. Thank you. And I still, every now and again, we'll do an online one, but we're back to the live sessions and I do them regularly in Naam and here on Gadigal at Addie Road, and there's sweetie pies and they're always populated by the most delightful queers and different bodies showing up to dance, and I always feel better after a book. My mother was an aerobics instructor, and so that's coming through as well there. I often work with tree meditation, visualization. Like in my able body, I'm upright a lot of the time, like whatever part of my root systems and the reality of my body. We spend a lot of time dealing with anxiety. The world is tremoring with anxiety. So it's like, what methods are you using to release, revolve? I think that coming into your sense of your own wellness and peace, if you can cultivate a sense of peace in your body, then from there you can build the fire, the water, the air, the wood, the other structures that you can create with. I can feel myself at 18 raging, and the rage energy propelled me to defiantly pull my innards out and swirl them around my head, or to shit and sprinkle it in glitter and toss it into the audience, lovingly. But that was a reaction, and that was good, and that was helpful. But as I've matured and there's been a rite of separation between that rage and also the mask of Betty slipping off, I've been able to cultivate a sense through performance as a form of meditation as well, of responsiveness. But the slippage and the interest and the inside and the outsideness of it all, you know, has always been a reaction to repression or my body being made to feel not my own, which has felt like a shared experience among women and queers and bodies that have been subjected to cruelty under dominant culture, and trying to return to a fecund space. So it's always done with humour and reverence, but also fuck you energy. That's why I think performance is so powerful and storytelling is so powerful, because we're meeting this energy of this pure spirit of somebody communicating with us, and in that story we feel our stories, you know.
This episode is part of a series of interviews with extraordinary people talking about their creative practice. You can find the rest of the series wherever you get your podcasts. You can also purchase our book titled How to Play in Slow Time, which unpacks the theory, practice, and teaching approaches to creativity from Brill Publishers at brill.com. How to Play in Slow Time was created and produced by Charlotte Farrell, Alexandra Talamo, Brioni Trezise, and Maria White. Edited and scored with original music by Tom Hogan. Special thanks goes to the Technical Resource Centre and the Creative Practice Lab at UNSW Sydney, where our podcast was produced. UNSW Sydney exists on the lands and waters that have been cared for since time immemorial by the Bidjigal people of the Eora Nation, whose sovereignty was never ceded. I'm Charlotte Farrell, and we hope you'll join us on the next episode of How to Play in Slow Time, interviews on creativity.